Stats in a Wrap, the podcast series from Eurostat.
De dobrojate всю informaci.
Eurostat in erster Linie.
Niere privé ou même de manière.
Dare Eurostat, visione di insieme più larga di quelli che
sta passando nel mondo.
Welcome to another episode of Stats in a Wrap, the podcast all about statistics from Eurostat, the statistical office of the European Union. If you've been listening to our podcasts, you'll know that we think data are delicious, and we like nothing better than to slice and dice and wrap them into bite-sized morsels whilst enjoying the intriguing stories, the fascinating conversations and startling truths about the everyday and not-so-everyday stats that surround us. Today in the Wrap Café, we're going to be talking about you. Well, you, the people who aren't statisticians, but who use official statistics for their everyday work, outside official circles. Yes, stats are the lifeblood of government policy, but they're also vital for a wide range of individuals and organisations trying to make sense of the many aspects of life in the EU. Whether they're educators, business people, academics or journalists, they need rock-solid official stats on which to build their work. So we've invited three contributors from very different backgrounds to tell us about the many different ways they use statistics from Eurostat. In Luxembourg, Patrick van Egmond from the transport consultancy Lux Mobility advises governments on their transport strategies and often has to work with deeply held misconceptions in his clients on things like road safety. Patrick, welcome to Stats in a Wrap.
Moyen, Jonathan, as we used to say in Luxembourg.
Meanwhile, in Portugal, Sergio Guerreiro from Turismo de Portugal has to keep the country's restaurants, independent hotels, rental services and others up to date on all the trends that affect the tourism industry. Welcome, Sergio.
Great to be here and thank you very much for inviting me.
And teacher Tatiana von Bonkowitz has made it her mission to get her pupils in Luxembourg to use hard facts when it comes to news stories and received opinion.
Thanks a lot for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Finally, giving us a perspective on the other side of the fence from Eurostat, Laia Genova assists 30 support centres that provide answers in 27 languages and coordinates requests between end users and experts in each field. Laia Genova from Eurostat, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Jonathan. It's a pleasure.
Before we dive in, let's hear from our public on the streets outside the Wrap Café about what comes to mind when they hear the phrase official statistics.
Well, basically, I know that it's a database of different questionnaires, and people use data of Eurostat in different researches, etc.
Unfortunately, I have not used Eurostat for my job. I think also because of social media, the biggest ones have more visibility and small ones, maybe it's harder to get to them. But I think it will be something very interesting to try to explore. And I think it's a good opportunity for more people to get to know about it.
So I'd like to start our discussion by going direct to Eurostat and Laia Genova to find out how you work with people who contact you with their queries and where you look for the information to help them. Can you just introduce us to your work?
We receive questions from users, mainly governments, students, companies, etc., in various languages. And these questions are handled by the National Statistical Institutes of the member states and enlargement countries. And they address basic queries, but if they don't have the answer, the question is escalated to me in the central support. So in many cases, I have the resources to respond, but when needed, I forward them to experts in the relevant statistical field for them to provide a detailed methodological explanation.
Now, as I understand it, your colleagues deal with different categories of inquiry. So, for example, some of them will be media inquiries from journalists.
There is also another support. This is dedicated to journalists and fact-checkers. This is the media support. And then there is another support for the colleagues in the European institutions.
I had this romantic idea that you'd be sitting in a room with a desk and a telephone on it and a large filing cabinet nearby, and people would ring you up and ask you a question and you'd go and give them the answer. But it's not quite like that, is it?
No, for us, it's very difficult sometimes to provide an answer on the phone. We really need to see the data the users are checking so we understand exactly the question. Because there are a lot of similar data sets, so we need to exactly know what dimensions they have selected and so want to properly understand and analyze the request so we can provide an accurate answer.
Well, yeah, we bump into this a lot in Stats in a Wrap, and that is the importance of asking a good question. It's a pretty critical part of statistical work, and we'll come back later in the podcast to this and your experience of people's questioning styles and the assumptions about definitions that they bring when they ask you questions. Let's step out of the Wrap Cafe again to hear a few words from our people in the street now.
I believe the majority of people that use Eurostat might be companies or also businesses that are trying to offer a service to the public and need large big data, the famous big data, to analyze what the public wants and what the public needs.
I think the data will be used by the governments, by non-government organizations, by maybe also the citizens, people who want to know about their hobbies. Maybe I think this is a huge community who uses it, but first the governments.
I want to talk to our users now, and perhaps we could start with Patrick van Egmond at Lux Mobility. First of all, tell us, what is Lux Mobility, and tell us a little bit about your work before we dive into how you use data from Eurostat.
Yeah, thank you, Jonathan. Yeah, Lux Mobility is a transport and mobility consultancy. We consult the national governments, but also the European Commission on transport and mobility, whether it be on topics like introducing of cycling, parking, road safety. The Eurostat data is really the basis of where we start.
Give us some examples of how you've used Eurostat statistics.
Well, recently we have finished a job with Transport Malta, Ministry of Transport, to make a sustainable urban mobility plan. Basically, they said to us, when starting that job, cycling is very dangerous in Malta. You can just not do it. That might be true, but the statistics showed that actually there were not so much accidents happening. And it was more what the newspapers wrote about it and what politicians had in their mind of how dangerous it was than the actual danger. Eurostat data helped us to actually start an informative discussion with the politicians about, okay, where do we start and where do we would like to go to?
Of course, not everyone welcomes the truth. I mean, particularly if it conflicts with cherished and long-held beliefs. What do you do if you have to work with a client whose views are not backed by the evidence? It's a potentially tricky situation, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the politicians, we all know them. They're there for the people. I think they do a great job. But sometimes in our studies, we don't like to go with what general thoughts are on certain mobility or transport topics. No, we really would like to start to a real study, what is possible, what's not possible. In the second step, we can discuss how can this politically be brought to the public. But at the beginning, we just would like to see reality. For that, Eurostat data is key.
I'm going to come back to you in a minute, Patrick, but I'd like to ask Sergio Guerreiro about his organization. Sergio, tell us a bit about what Turismo de Portugal does and your role in it.
I'm Senior Director for Strategy and Knowledge Management at Turismo Portugal. Turismo Portugal is the National Tourism Administration Authority here in Portugal. So we deal with everything from regulation to planning to training of people. We are a funding agency. We're also a marketing agency. And we are frequent users of Eurostat because comparability of data from our competitors, let's call it like this, is crucial to the design of our policy in all senses. We represent a sector in Portugal that is 95 to 98% of the companies are SMEs. So we designed a data hub for the industry where we concentrate more than 35 data sources and we deliver to the tourism industry in one single platform, travelbi.turismoportugal.pt, where we give freely access to companies of the most recent trends of tourism industry, both in Portugal and internationally. So that's our relationship with Eurostat. It is a fundamental data source for us, provide us some data that we are not have access to, such as, for example, experimental statistics on short-term rental, which is, I would say, a hot topic, I would say, everywhere in the world regarding tourism. And Eurostat provide us a very useful tool to understand where we are in terms of tourism development and behavior.
There should be more awareness of Eurostat because very few people, at least in my country, know of the existence of Eurostat. And since I believe it's a very useful and, like, in our today's society, very important institution, there should be more awareness of the services it provides and how they can be used for making our society better.
Tatiana, now let me come to you. You're a school teacher and you're very passionate about getting your students to think critically and to use data sources really well in group discussions about social and political issues, especially. Talk us through how you work with Eurostat when you're doing this.
Yeah, I guess what Patrick just said, it's something I encounter on a regular basis with my students, whether it's in literature, where we discuss, of course, also a bit of politics and history, or in human science. And they come up with an idea, yeah, you can't ride a bike in Malta, everybody is rich in Luxembourg, men and women now earn the same, we don't need feminism anymore. And I want to challenge them to undermine their positions with facts and figures, and to not just pick up what they've heard or what they've seen somewhere. And Eurostat offers really good possibilities for them to play around with the data. There are different formats. They can search different topics, and I really encourage them to do that playfully. So it's not so much find out how many people do this or that in a certain country, but I really want them to play around with the data.
Patrick, one of the things we were talking about in preparing this podcast was how timeliness in statistics is important, especially in transport, a field which is incredibly diverse and fast-moving with constantly evolving technology. I'm just wondering how you advise your clients at Lux Mobility using official statistics, which can be more than a few months, possibly even a year old.
Depends a bit on which level we make these plans. Strategies that we work a lot on are sustainable urban mobility plans, or national urban mobility plans. And there actually, the Eurostat statistics are rather in line with what we need. For example, we see that car traffic for the daily commute is around 72% in Luxembourg. And then we're able to make a plan and say, okay, how can we bring it down to 65% by increasing people taking public transport or some cycling? The moment that we work with local organizations or companies and would like to make their mobility plan, Eurostat data form a bit the overall framework in which we try to move. We make, for example, use of real-time data, track people by mobile phones, try to combine in our calculations with Eurostat data.
Sergio, you're quite passionate about data literacy and helping your constituents to understand the significance of, say, sustainability data, because people in policy are not always natural statisticians. They know how to use statistics, but sometimes it's quite hard to unpack the tables, to interrogate the infographics, and just to try and make sense of them and to communicate them. Just tell us about your experience, because you have a wide variety of people who you have to serve and who you work with, and you have to communicate not just the raw data, but what's underneath it, how it was obtained, and what the significance of it is. Can you just tell us a bit more about that?
It's a great question, and I think it's one of the pressures that we have today for delivering data. Timeliness is absolutely crucial, and especially after the pandemic in our sector, people don't want to rely on past statistics. They want to know what's the next chapter. So it's a constant pressure on that. And my perspective on this is I like to believe in complementary data sources. So I really much rely on official statistics because they are the common truth that we believe above all. But then I complement it to do our work with other sources, which are typically more timely and typically more granular, thinking about mobile data or credit card data that can give us more information to drive businesses from companies, understanding shifts of patterns. And I think this complementarity helps us to improve the quality of data that we give to people to take decisions. In the end of the day, that's our role.
That's very interesting, Sergio. We make use of credit card data to see how much people come shopping in the weekend in the shopping center. Do you use credit card data to see how much tourists are coming to Portugal?
No, we don't use that for volume. We use for behavior. So we can understand with the use of credit cards data where people spend their money geographically, but also in terms of economic activities where the spending is done. So if it's in restaurants, if it's in hotels, if it's in transports or commercial sites. So we can understand different kinds of patterns of tourists that visit Portugal and basically give that data to our marketeers to understand how can we
improve the spending in the country and make also developments in our tourism offer to be adjusted to the preferences of our visitors.
I was just thinking what you two are saying, you're in a very economical, fast-moving world, but one of the themes that really unites us is the fact that we say we need good data to make decisions. And I think that's something that today is so important, whether it's in the economical environment or whether it's on a social level, where people just pick up something and take it as their decision rather than fact-checking it. And that's where, for me, Eurostat or others really come in to help shape our society.
We were using like official website of Eurostat to see the reflection of the number of migrants at the current stage. The website should be a little bit more user-friendly for people who doesn't use it that often, because in order to understand it and know how to use all of the tools on the website, you should be aware of it. You should use it more often, probably.
Sergio, you're quite passionate about data literacy and helping your constituents and your people that you work with to understand the significance of, say, sustainability data, because people in policy are not always natural statisticians. They know how to use statistics, but sometimes it's quite hard to unpack the tables, to interrogate the infographics and try to make sense of them and to communicate them. Just tell us about your experience, because you have a wide number of people who you have to serve and who you work with, and you have to communicate not just the raw data, but what's underneath it, how it was obtained and what the significance of it is. Can you just tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, it's a very good question, and it really connects with what Tatiana was saying. People today consume information in a very speedy way, so we need to change the way that we approach the users. It's not enough to have nice report with nice graphics and the really nice production if you don't communicate properly. That's one thing that we've learned. I run a team of people that work for data, and one thing that I always tell them is listen to the consumer. Let's check how people consume our data. What do they want? And we try to explain. So communication is a very important block of it. We started to pack our reports and our statistics with very fancy communication cards that can explain what is the most important thing that they're going to read in the report. And then we invite them to go there.
So what you're saying is that the data has to serve the user. In other words, if the user can't understand and use the data quickly and usefully, it'll need to be repackaged, rethought, or represented in some way.
Absolutely. And if you go to a very complex website, that is absolutely the truth. In our focus group we did, someone asked, well, do you have information on the golf courses? And I said, well, we have information. It's hidden somewhere in our website, but it's there. So there is something that we need to improve in terms of getting data accessible to users. If we move to new generations, it's going to be more and more of that, because they are from instant generation. They want to click and have access to what they're searching. So the more complex system we built, the harder it is to get to the user.
Yes. Well, welcome to the ChatGPT revolution, I guess. I just wanted to come to Tatiana now. You're not a teacher of statistics, but I'm just wondering how much numeracy and number confidence you find in your pupils. What do you do about the need for confidence in handling basic maths and statistical literacy in the classroom?
So, yes, you're absolutely right. So mathematics is already a subject that many students in some way feel uncomfortable with or definitely fear. Statistics is kind of like even worse. By playing around, by really looking at, for example, trends, looking at graphs, and if I look at the Eurostat graphs, they're nice and colorful, so we can really interpret, what does it mean? What do I see? Oh, you know, the graphs get bigger, smaller, whatever. They can see that it's not just numbers. We can actually put pictures onto those numbers. I help the students to go from the visual part more to the number parts. And certain things, I will just tell them, this is a way to do it, because I really want to get them away from that fear of this black box statistics and the daunting formulas. But say it's something you can really touch, use, see, and play with.
Again, it's back to that relatability issue, isn't it? It's about seeing numbers as a tool rather than just a sort of scary thing you're supposed to know about. You actually just, you have to become the master and the user. Laia, as I mentioned earlier, you have on offer an amazing array of educational and learning tools at Eurostat. Perhaps you could just talk us through what is actually out there for educators especially, and for people who want to improve their knowledge, because there is so much to use, isn't there? Could you tell us a bit about that?
Eurostat has done a great effort, I think, in last years to make statistics more attractive to everyone. So, and I'm very happy to hear what Tatiana is saying now, because I see the results. You can see there are more and more visualization tools, and they are interactive graphs, so you can actually play around with the figures. Besides, you have, of course, the statistics explained articles. This is kind of Wikipedia. So our statistics are described and explained in an easy way, and of course, plenty of concepts are linked to our glossary, where you can find the definitions, which is very, very important also. An educational corner, where you can find videos for the students. They are organizing contests also, so there are a lot of initiatives to make statistics attractive. I'm very happy to hear that Jan is using all these resources.
Now, I have to say, especially the visualizations on social topics, that's something the students really, really like, because it's very close to them. And of course, anything that's in video or podcast format, as long as they don't have to read, that's even better.
We typically assume that the people that are looking for our data, they are experts in our data, but things are becoming more and more complex. And I use a lot Eurostat and the statistics explained to go through, for example, environmental data, which I'm not expert at all, but with that, I would say statistics for dummies in terms of tools helps me to progress in terms of my knowledge and understand what is that kind of data means to. And the complexity that we are living on, I think that is a great asset, and congratulations, Leia, on that particular spot, because I'm a heavy user of that to enrich me and to understand what I'm actually reading in terms of the information that is there.
And I should plug here the wonderful Key Figures on Europe, which is one of the most popular publications of Eurostat. And the 2024 edition is now available. It's packed with infographics, which are as informative as they are beautiful. And I do urge you to obtain a copy. Patrick, I just wanted to ask you about data literacy and statistical literacy in the people you work with. I mean, only a few of us routinely handle complex statistical models and concepts, and yet they're becoming increasingly important, especially in transport. What's your experience?
Now, of course, you meet all type of clients, and some have really good education in statistics, and then in general, they understand what you're telling them. But many, they want us to tell what they actually would like to hear up front already. So they ask us actually to search for the data that proves their statement. I think that's actually the hard part of our job, is that we can maybe start from there, but then slowly introduce what are actually the realities. To give an example, I have to think about this. For example, okay, we see that a small country like Luxembourg knows that 61% of its CO2 emissions is due to transport. But then, a lot of that transport is actually done by cross-border workers or trucks passing through Luxembourg on the Route du Soleil to Spain and etc. and coming back. And then, well, we know that we have to work on that topic.
This can be very useful, in my opinion, to the public to also make self-based research. I myself find very useful information on statistics when I'm researching a topic, getting a deeper understanding of the topic.
Fascinating. This is really important, isn't it? Because, Laia, it's about the extent to which people not only understand the data, the statistics at one level, but they understand the methodology, the metadata, the process, how it was arrived at, what that statistic is actually comprised of and what it means. It's almost like going to a supermarket and looking at the ingredients of a product to make sure that it doesn't have any allergens, or to make sure that it was made in a particular way, if that matters to you. To what extent do you find people who might be experts or apparently very knowledgeable about statistics, but they make fundamental errors in comparing data sets with different methodologies, for example? These statistics were arrived at in different ways, and yet they're used comparably. What's your experience of the deeper knowledge about statistics among some of the people who come to you with questions?
This creates plenty of misunderstandings with our figures. Because, as I said, we can have similar data sets, but they come from different data collections. Therefore, these figures are based on different methodologies. For instance, yesterday there was a user that couldn't understand the difference between to data sets and I explain, okay, this one, the first one, is based on demographic data. This is not a survey. This is actual records and includes all the population. And she was comparing this to another data set, very similar, about foreign-born population in the country. But this data comes from a survey and doesn't include the same population. It's only about active people. So for everyone who needs to write about these statistics, they really need to visit our methodological files attached to the tables where you can find the definitions and all relevant information to correctly understand the data, because otherwise it can be tricky.
It's a lot of work for you and your team to help people unpack and understand all this complex information. I mean, it would seem reasonable to expect them to pay a fee of some kind, wouldn't it?
No. This service is free of charge for any citizen of the world. Actually, it's funny because sometimes we receive requests from users, sometimes from the US or China. They say, okay, I found this data, but do you have more to offer if I pay? Like, no, sorry. Our policy is to provide free access data for everyone in the world at the same time through our website. There is no paid service. You cannot get more. If it's not there, if it's not already available on the website, there is no data.
Patrick, are you observing an increased awareness of data overall? I mean, since the pandemic, for example, data and data literacy, data science, statistics and all that kind of thing is much more in the public eye. People are handling information more carefully, much more rigorously than perhaps they did, or they're more inclined to be skeptical or inquiring. Have you observed a change in the way that people use and talk about data?
What we see that people look on Google or use ChatGPT now to get all kind of information, we actually see that our clients are better informed about what goes on. I think the different reports that come out on climate change, all this climate reporting that a lot of governments, cities, big companies now have to do, actually make them come back to actually what are actually the figures. And they start asking questions about, okay, how much does it actually impact all my employees coming by car to work? Or what does it mean to become a net zero city, an emission city? What do I have to do to become CO2 neutral? And as transport and mobility is a big part of that impact, they are aware that figures are important. So I think in that sense, Eurostat plays a more central role in getting the answers to our present challenges that we have in Europe and the rest of the world.
Well, we've run out of time. Absolutely fascinating subjects. We could talk at considerably greater length. There are so many different avenues we could be going down, and maybe we should be going down. But unfortunately, we've reached the end of this episode. So it remains for me to say a big thank you to all the contributors for this amazingly interesting session about how people use data and statistics from Eurostat. Tatiana von Bonkowitz, thank you very much. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Lovely. And Laia Genova from Eurostat, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Jonathan. It was a pleasure.
Patrick van Egmond at Lux Mobility, the transport consultancy, thank you so much for joining us at Stats in a Wrap today.
Yeah, and I would like to thank also Eurostat. I learned something today.
Lovely. I hope we all did. And Sergio in Lisbon, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us and help us through this amazingly complex and interesting subject. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much. It was really a pleasure and I really enjoyed the conversation.
If you've enjoyed Stats in a Wrap, don't forget to follow us on social media and share our adventures with friends and colleagues, where the show can be found on Spotify, Apple, and all the usual places. And of course, join us for the next edition, when we'll be dishing up more flavoursome insights from Eurostat, this time about the critically important and much under-researched subject of gender-based violence. Join us then. But for now, goodbye.